Hello, Santa Fe in Northern New Mexico. This is another special edition of Health Para Todos with your hosts, Arturo Gonzalez and
Larry Martinez.
And Health Para Todos is brought to you by whom, Larry?
Christus St. Vincent Regional Medical Center, Presbyterian Medical Services, and the Conama Foundation.
Okay. We've had a number of pleasant and very informative interviews. I think, first of all, before we begin, Larry, we should offer our listening audience hope that they have a wonderful 2026.
Absolutely. Happy New Year to all our listeners.
Hope it's a great year. Fruitful, beneficial. Uh-huh. And we look forward to broadcasting for you a number of issues. And so we're so happy that you listened to us. Thank you for doing that.
Absolutely. And before we get started, too, I do want to express our condolences to the family of one of our colleagues passed away, Seferino Montaño, who was the head of healthcare clinics on the eastern and southern part of the state, and a good friend of ours for many, many years.
Very, very influential in healthcare policy.
Yes, and every time we'd invite him to be on the program, he would make the observation, your ratings must be hurting if that's you're asking me to be on.
Yeah.
And he was such a great guy.
And after that, they hurt even more. So we never interviewed him after that.
Yeah, but he was a wonderful friend and colleague, and I think that's the hardest part about getting older in our society.
We're losing too many people.
Too many of our friends and colleagues.
Well, and I want to extend sympathy to the Gonzalez family up in Apodaca Hill. We lost our sister-in-law, Maria Lopez, on December the 4th.
And unfortunately, we've lost too many close people and friends. And Jerry Ortiz
Cipino's wife passed away.
And you and I go to that funeral, too. So,
anyway.
But let's get down to the business.
Well, hold on a second. I finished my introduction.
Oh, okay. You weren't kidding when you said 15 minutes.
It's this time of year again. It always happens around this time.
Yes.
When people are jockeying for position, you and I are trying to figure out what's going up with the state. We're trying to, it's a 30-day session as opposed to 60 days.
Right.
And so we're going around with chickens with our heads cut off, trying to figure out what's going to come about.
Yeah.
And so we have as our guest today the main rooster who knows what's going to happen. And who is that, Larry?
We are fortunate again to have not only our friend and colleague, but
the fifth amigo.
The state's foremost expert on legislative affairs, and that's the Senate Majority Leader, the Honorable Peter Wirth.
Peter, welcome, Peter.
And thank you, guys.
Peter, thank you so much for serving as our mentor, you know, in terms of understanding the legislative process and the way things are going.
And so far, you've been right on, bro.
Well, I'm happy to be here. And it is fun to kind of give you all and give the listeners a roadmap. And yeah, my job, and this is the lead in is we start a week from today. So next Tuesday. And the hard part is these couple of weeks are almost more work than just get the train to the station. You know, that's what I've got, all the pieces moving and trying to line up all these different things, but feeling good about where we are and happy to share and get into things. And Happy New Year to you guys and to everyone who's listening.
Yeah.
Again, these are crazy. Let me just say something.
Yes.
These are crazy times in so many different ways. But one of the things that I've really, you got to pause and just be thankful for this world we live in, this amazing state we're in, and there's so many good things, and it's easy to get just wrapped up in the noise, and it's hard to even watch the news anymore.
But you know, this state, you guys are doing some very good things.
We've done some great things,
absolutely.
And this is an amazing state, and so it's fun to be able to share. And Health Para Todos is spot on in terms of kind of your message about what we're going to do, and we'll talk about that. Healthcare is going to be front and center in this whole upcoming session.
Okay. Did you want to talk about the process there, compadre?
Yes, I was, but before I get into that, too, I did want to point out that there is a survey that came out last week called Wallet Hub, in which they cited all kinds of different factors in affecting a state's standing as a place to raise a family. And it had a lot of negative things in it. In fact, they placed New Mexico as dead last. And yet, at the same time, our bond ratings are going up.
We have a great bond rating.
You know, and I was reading some of the comments of people who had looked at these factors, and they were saying exactly what you were saying, what a wonderful state we live in. the quality of our life here in New Mexico, our cultures, our cultural richness, and all of those wonderful things. Well, you know,
and
we've
our
got
fiscal responsibility, and we take it for granted sometimes.
Yeah. Well, in fact, that was what was cited in the improved bond rating for the state, in that the legislature had acted so responsibly in making certain that they're not committing to recurring expenditures over the next few years when we may not have the resources right. that we've had in past years. And even in this year, Senator, as I'm sure you will touch on, we're not getting quite as much in terms of surplus revenue as we have in the past, but we've positioned ourselves very well.
We have, and we've talked about this on this show, taking now money, which is the non-recurring money, putting it into these funds and being able to use it to make future money.
Yeah, off the interest.
That's right.
Significant.
And also being able to use, so we have a fund called the Grow Fund, Growth Opportunity Fund. Mm-hmm. Again, we parked a bunch of money in there. You're going to hear discussion about that in this session when it comes to whether we do a tax package, because we may actually fund the tax package using the Grow Fund. Mm-hmm. So instead of having a $150 or $200 million recurring tax package, you use the Grow Fund, you fund it for 3 years. Mm-hmm. So it's the equivalent of having a 3-year sunset, which makes a lot of sense because some of the things, quantum and fusion, things we need to talk about.
AI.
Well, all that stuff's happening, but I think so again, the way we've done this, we've had a huge increase in recurring spending in the last 7 years under the Lujan Grisham administration. So I want to be clear.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of the best of all scenarios. We've been able to do a whole bunch of much needed work, but we haven't just gone completely overboard and done so much recurring spending that we're in a position, you know, that we're now the envy. I travel around the country with other leaders and they're shocked when they hear, you know, we've got the second largest permanent fund only behind Alaska, and we're going to be ahead of Alaska before you know it.
That's wonderful.
And here we are talking about a 2.5 increase.
Yes.
Just north. I mean, Colorado's got $1 billion shortfall and they're talking about healthcare cuts.
Right.
And we've done, I mean, I'll tell you both, coming into those special sessions, one of the most, I think, rewarding things for me and for the other members, just to be able to come in when you have changes like we're seeing in Washington when it comes to healthcare and food. Mm-hmm. You know, the Affordable Care Act subsidies that have gone away now, we came in, we backfilled those.
Right.
So we had someone at a town hall last week stand up and say, I just want to thank you all. You know, I was able to get the best insurance under the Affordable Care Act that I've been able to get.
Yes.
And so
and can afford it.
And can afford it. And then the second thing is to come in the second special session, 460,000 New Mexicans are on SNAP, which is food benefits. Mm-hmm. And to have a governor willing to bring us in, to have bipartisan support.
Yes.
To make sure that those funds were going to stay in place until we got into session in January, in case that, you know, the federal administration continued to play games with SNAP benefits, which they were doing. It's incredibly rewarding. And I just think that my colleagues and those of us that serve, it's why you do it.
Yeah.
And so we're coming into this with a good feeling after having two successful special sessions, because we've talked about some not so successful special sessions.
But it was those special sessions, the work before the sessions that Larry and I interviewed you on, that you had set the groundwork. So when you got into the special sessions, it wasn't so much fighting and bickering. You had some objectives and some goals that you accomplished.
You got to. It's got
hard work.
We like to say it's got to be cooked.
Yes,
when you're heading in, and you're going to hear, and we'll talk about the medical compact.
Yeah,
which again, some of the advocates out in our community who are very effective, you know, put incredible pressure on all of the members, the governor. I mean, I've had my head taken off about 10 different times just saying, pass them all. Don't even look at them. Just pass them all. You can't amend them anyway. Yeah. Well, it turns out that that's just flat wrong.
Yeah.
They can be amended. And we didn't do it in a special session, but Senator Linda Trujillo from here in Santa Fe, I asked her to lead a bipartisan, bicameral group of legislators. And they've been meeting, and through lots of negotiations, have come to agreement with the medical compact, which is one of the compacts, the big one. Mm-hmm. So I'm super excited that that's going to be Senate Bill 1. I get to decide what bills get what number, and that's how important that is.
Wow.
And we'll do it in the first 2 weeks.
So we can
talk about that in a minute.
Well, in fact, that's part of the process that we wanted to talk about. That you were very successful before the 2025 legislative session in getting legislation already positioned and ready for action the minute the legislative session started. And that's how we restructured and rebuilt our behavioral health care system in this state, you know. So and let's just remind the listeners that there's a deadline of Friday of this week for legislators to submit bills, pre-register bills, I guess is what we're calling it.
They're pre-file.
Pre-filing them, so that they're ready to go the minute the session starts. And, you know, I know lots of people complain. They say it seems like nothing gets done the first part of the sessions, and then everybody's scrambling at the end of the sessions. Well, that wasn't the case in 2025. You had within a week or so the major pieces of the behavioral health legislation passed and ready and on the governor's desk for action. You know?
Well, and we're going to do something similar in this session. In the first 2 weeks, there's four bills where there's agreement between both chambers and the governor, two compacts, the medical compact, the social workers compact, a $1.5 billion road bond bill.
Yes.
That made it through the House, made it through all the committees, got into a little kerfuffle with the Senate Republicans and didn't end up passing. And then the immigration detention bill. Yes. Those four bills, again, the work has been done. And so you're going to see something different I think conceivably we'll have those bills. Some of them, three will start in the Senate, two in the, there's one other one, the civil commitment bill, the harm to self, right, harm to others. The House is not yet fully on board on that. So that's going to take a little longer in the House, but you're going to see these bills move very fast. And you could even see bills on the floor for third reading in the first week of a 30-day session.
That's fantastic.
Let's get into that a little bit.
Let me just point out one thing before we get started on that, so that our listeners, are just going to remind them that the way the budget process works, and this is a budget session, so it's really restricted to the budget and anything else that the governor wishes to include in her call.
Yeah.
And so it's a 30-day session, unlike the 60-day sessions when anybody and everyone can introduce bills, and they can do that now too, but a lot of them are going to be declared as non-germane. but each state government agency has to submit on September 1st of 2025, its budget request, which goes to the Department of Finance and Administration, and then is shared with the legislature and everybody else. It's a public document, can be looked at. Then the legislature makes its recommendations on the budget, and they issued that on January the 7th, and we've got an extensive report on that. And so then that sets the stage for the legislature acting on the budget. And to be quite frank, I was a little surprised that the overall figures are not that far apart. You know,
it's not that far apart.
We're looking at the governor wanted to spend $11.3 billion, and the legislature is saying $11.1 billion. So I know this sounds really sacrilegious, but $200 million is a lot of money. But in comparison to what we're talking about, that's really a relatively small amount. And of course, it originates in the House, in House Bill 2. House Bill 2 is passed by the House and then goes to the Senate. The Senate tacks on amendments, makes some changes to it, and then usually we have a conference committee of Senate and House members to iron out whatever those differences are to give the governor what the legislature's overall will is with respect to the budget. So
yeah, the one thing I put an asterisk on the conference committee, we try not to do that.
Again, you can get away from it.
That's right. We've been pretty good. I've actually had a number of those little mediation sessions with both leaders. And I can remember Senator Smith sitting in my office, and you know, you get small little things, and it's just, we got to get this done because again, conference committees can go south quickly. And that, right. of course, budget is why we're here.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's the big focus of the session. I will also, one more, a little addition, joint resolutions
right.
to start a constitutional amendment can certainly be introduced. Those don't need a message from the governor. They don't need a signature by the governor. 50% in both chambers and they go to the voters.
Right.
And then, of course, the infamous memorials.
Yes. Those, they can be introduced at any time, anywhere, any issue. And they don't generally get the same level of debate the other bills get.
You know,
have money in them.
Correct.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about the medical and the social work compacts. And I'm also interested in that immigration detention thing in view of what's happening in Minneapolis and in Oregon and stuff. So go ahead, Senator.
Yeah. So the compacts, again, one of the big things we've heard is shortage of doctors, shortage of healthcare practitioners. So the compact, the medical compact allows for telehealth is really the huge piece to this. Mm-hmm. And so it's a piece of the overall puzzle. And again, the issue is you've got a national group that's created this medical compact and states can elect to join. And again, it was I said up front, it was kind of messaged that this was an up or down vote, join it or don't join it. Well, in the Senate Judiciary Committee, we look at these things pretty carefully, and there's a whole bunch of things in there that contradict New Mexico law. And so you want to make sure patients are protected, providers are protected. And so changes were made in Senate Judiciary. And again, it just didn't happen in the 60-day session because of that. Social Work Compact, also changes made in Senate Judiciary, passed the Senate, and then the House decided not to hear that one in the 60-day session. So Senator Linda Trujillo has been working very hard to go through the Senate Judiciary amendments from the last year. Again, what we talked about, building on the work that's been done, protecting women's health care decisions, gender-affirming care, subpoena powers, just making sure this is a New Mexico compact that works. And I was interested, I sleep funny hours and get up early and read lots of newspapers. And I have a daughter who's in law school now in Boston. So I was actually looking at the Boston newspaper this morning. And sure enough, the editorial was about the medical compact, saying, make sure you make this work for Boston. Mm-hmm. Go negotiate and make it happen. And I was very kind of proud of the work that Senator Trujillo has done. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And Senator Cervantes, who's the chair of Senate Judiciary, who didn't vote for it the 60-day session, he's signing on as a sponsor.
That's fantastic.
So again, these are, and there's more, it's presented, there's 10 compacts. Well, that's not quite true, because you look at the ones that are actually working, some of them aren't even up and running yet. So there's 3 or 4 other compacts, and we need to look at those.
Yeah.
Whether it happens in the 30-day session, to be determined. I think we've kind of created an avenue where you have a bipartisan, bicameral group who works with the board itself. So the thing is, if we just make the changes in the session, then you're at the mercy of the board. Are they going to accept them or not?
Right. Exactly.
So it just takes a lot of work. And
well, so I was going to say, Arturo, just because I think this is an important point. When you were administering La Familia Medical Center here in Santa Fe, and when I was in primary care too, I can't tell you how many times, and my guess is you got similar calls from providers who wanted to come to New Mexico, wanted to serve here. And we were encouraging them to come in. Then they'd run up against the licensing process, and it was so onerous. They said, well, I can't go 6 months without practicing and having an income. And what this is going to resolve, if this is successful, and it's looking very much like it is going to be, is they can, if we accept, basically, New Mexico will be accepting the licensing standards of the state they came from, which are very similar to our processes anyway. This is going to make immediate numbers of providers eligible to start working immediately.
Well, and the medical board is going to be the one that administers this one. Mm-hmm. And so there's going to be a whole bunch of implementation, how that works. I will say Senator Trujillo, when she was Representative Trujillo, worked with Senator Ivy Soto on some changes to medical licensing and a way to do reciprocity currently without the compact. Mm-hmm. So getting these to intersect and doing the implementation, that's step two.
Yeah.
Step one, though, is getting this across the line. And I'm very encouraged. Again, Senate Bill 1.
Yes.
So we've prioritized it. And what an amazing thing to serve with Senator Linda Trujillo. I mean, Nancy Rodriguez has huge shoes to fill.
Yes.
For all the work that she did. And so we are so lucky to have someone. And Senator Trujillo is also going to be working on it. You're going to hear her name a lot in this session. Yes.
So is that the focus of the compacts is to be able to license providers more efficiently so that they can come and work with us in New Mexico?
So, and it's also, it's really, these kind of came out of the military.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. That's what started this, is military families move around.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's just trying to make it more, the reciprocity is mm-hmm. The nurse compact, we adopted a number of years ago.
Right.
We had the nurse shortage, and that's
the only one.
That's right. Got, and that kind of came screaming down, mm-hmm. and we adopted that. I think we had a deadline. We had to do it in the first 4 days of a session. And so that one didn't get the level of scrutiny that it needed, but we passed that. And there's some interesting fallout from that. From that compact, because folks are working as, you know, if you're visiting, you get a higher pay, and there's a whole bunch of the, you know, once you do it, you got to go implement it. And so, but yes, this is just, again, designed to kind of facilitate interstate interactions and practitioners, and they're all different, Arturo. They just, you got to get into them and look into the specifics of them.
Yeah.
I'm just encouraged that this is part of the big healthcare discussion, and there's a whole string of bills that are coming.
Well, let's put one issue aside, because I'm not sure this one's going to get the attention or even have the prospect of passage, but we've seen that Presbyterian Health Systems has been advertising on the media the loss of providers and doctors in New Mexico, and they are identifying the malpractice situation as the basic reason, right? That that in fact, because we have no limits, no caps on judgments and settlements in many areas of malpractice and liability on the part of providers, the insurance premiums have risen so rapidly to provide coverage for providers in that regard, that many of them are choosing to leave the state rather than stay here and have to try to pay those large numbers, those large increases in their insurance. What do you think the prospect is for that being addressed? Because it's been tried quite a number of times in recent years.
And a couple things. We do have caps in the Medical Malpractice Act. You know, the issue is punitive damages.
Right.
And, you know, the punitive damages get raised. Full disclosure, I like to always disclose. I mean, I do mediations in my other life, and so I have mediated some of these cases. I've also been court appointed as a personal representative in some of these medical malpractice cases, which has given me an extraordinary, not on a contingency fee, a plaintiff's lawyer thing, but there as a fiduciary to protect the family going through this. And so I've seen some of what's kind of happened. And there are some things that are just horrific.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to tell you, we are some of these private equity hospitals. We're the number one state for private equity hospitals. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they come in, they tell a doctor, okay, your caseload just doubled. They're getting folks that are traveling from other states that are working, and it's just a level of care that results in some things that are really unfortunate. So I just want to throw that out there, that piece out there.
These are not frivolous lawsuits is what you're telling us.
There are things out there that are serious, that are very serious.
Yes.
We've had two. So, and I've been right in the middle of these. Mm-hmm. In 2021, we did increase the cap for damages in a medical malpractice case. It was at $600,000, where it had been for 15, 20 years, which basically means that was the maximum you could recover. Generally have to pay a lawyer a third of that. And we have a patient's compensation fund where the state actually has stepped in to pick up some of that. So that was increased. And also the big thing was in 2021, the hospitals through what we like to call over in the session a movida. The superintendent of insurance.
For our listening audience, movida means creativity.
So in 2013, Superintendent Franchini single-handedly made a decision to allow a whole string of hospitals, including Presbyterian, into the patient's compensation fund. And so this is a fund where doctors contribute money, basically, and you go through this fund. It pays out. The doctors do the first 200, and when it was 600, the second 400 was picked up by the fund through all the fees paid into it. All the hospitals came in. The premiums weren't adjusted, so the fund didn't have enough money. And they had to come back to the state, and the taxpayers bailed this thing out. So 2021, the hospitals were phased out. Well, they don't like that. They liked it better when they were in the fund. Mm-hmm. So that's their big issue that's happening. And then 2023 was the independent practitioners. So the smaller independent practitioners in groups had been put in the same category as the hospitals. So their caps were going to go up to a much higher number. Mm-hmm. And Senator Baca and I actually mediated that and then sat in the governor's office. And we talked about that,
Yes, we did.
Sat in the governor's office and got the insurance company to agree to lower the rates. And there is no question the insurance rates, I mean, we're all seeing it. Look, I have a law practice. Mm-hmm. My malpractice rates have gone up. I'm subject to the same punitive damages that doctors are. So again, I'm sympathetic to this. Mm-hmm. And so we will see that this session. Senator, Representative Christine Chandler from Los Alamos
yes.
is going to introduce a bill. I've had conversations with the governor about this. What I'm encouraged is that the different groups are at the table talking. So in 2021, it wasn't forced on them. I mean, they were put in a room and told you got to get this done, but right. they agreed in 2021 and 2022, these were compromises. Yeah. And so I think this will be a discussion. I've met with a lot of doctors here in Santa Fe. I certainly am sympathetic. I tell you what, is trying to run an independent practice these days.
You can't.
It's just
difficult,
extraordinarily difficult. Mm-hmm. And there's no question that the insurance cost has gone up.
So are the hospitals at this discussions?
They're at mm-hmm. the table.
You know, if they want to participate in the fund, they don't pay into the fund like everyone else.
Well, that's certainly something I think that will
it's
be
one
discussed.
Of the options, right.
You know, what's the amount? And again, and of course, doctors don't have to be part of the patient. They can go out and do their own insurance. They just don't get the cap. That's why they want to be in the fund, because that's the cap. It's a very complicated issue. I think there's no question that it's out there. And again, this will be a piece and discuss. And I am hopeful that we can move some of these pieces combined with a whole string of things on the front end that we should talk about that are in the budget.
Exactly. And let me just say once again, and I said it back when you were playing such a key role, that was one of your finest hours in terms of being able to bring together these disparate groups and get an agreement, which gave us a temporary resolution to what the problem was.
Yeah, we would have lost a bunch of
independent
providers, and so
Senator, you want to talk about some of the healthcare bills. Go ahead. Why don't you hit that?
I can remember, you know, I replaced Max Call, who was one of the legends.
Right.
And he was chair of the House Appropriations Committee. Fun story was started as a Republican from Roswell in the 60s. He gave me all of his old campaign matchbooks, and he had a tight crew cut and a lot of things on those matchbooks that are totally inappropriate today.
Three-piece suits.
Came up to Santa Fe, kind of the hair started to grow out, earrings.
And Levi's and Levi jackets.
Levi jackets and just an amazing individual. And he was a real mentor, because we transitioned and he helped get me on the House Appropriations Committee. And what he said to me is, you know, all the policy, Peter, is driven by the money.
Yeah.
So he and Jamie Cook and Speaker Lujan, I ended up getting on House Appropriations instead of Judiciary. Yeah. All the lawyers didn't like that one bit, but I learned all this budget stuff. So, you know, when I see things in the budget, you know that that's the policies driven there. Here's an example. $545 million to build a new medical school.
Yeah, mm-hmm. What's that about?
That's a big deal.
Yes.
We're going to double the size of the medical school.
Mm-hmm. So where are you going to put it? They're landlocked.
Well, good question. I can't give you all the details about that. I'm sure there's answers to that, Arturo. But I think that the point, though, is that that's just there's a whole bunch of different pieces that need to get moved. Okay. And obviously, having more medical students here, we're going to work on money for rural residencies.
Okay.
That's mm-hmm. important. We've talked very a lot about the trust fund, the Medicaid trust fund, the behavioral mm-hmm. health trust fund, trying to put more money in there. Additional money from the state to pay residents. Mm-hmm. There's a process now where through Medicare, I believe the residents get paid, but an additional boost. Other states have done that. A nurse loan repayment fund. We're going to work on that. Health teaching core, clinician faculty pay. Here's a big one, New Mexico Health Professional Loan Repayment.
That's fantastic.
So Chair mm-hmm. Chandler, Christine Chandler, and Senator Hickey are going to have bills on that one. Tax credits, we talked a little bit about those, are really important. And then another bill that I know, Larry, you've been working a little with Dr. Nuzzo on.
Yes.
that one we're going to put on this list too, alternative. Now, again, remember, some of these bills aren't budget, so they got to get a message from the governor. Mm-hmm. So we get to we propose and she disposes.
Right.
And so she could dispose real quick by no message.
Right.
But a lot of these are budget bills, and so will be considered germane.
Yes. And we've interviewed, by the way, Dr. Nuzzo, and he basically what he's trying to do is expand the base of providers who can be reimbursed, which is, as we look at all of these things, if we pass just a few of these, that's going to contribute greatly to our ability to keep providers in the state.
You know, the question mm-hmm. from our audience is, well, if he's looking for services to be reimbursed, why can't he get reimbursed? What's so special about what he's doing that needs to get reimbursed?
Well, let's all remember that. And
practice.
Well, I was around when Medicaid came into being back in 1965 and Medicare. And by the way, our former United States Senator Clinton P. Anderson passed the bill that established Medicare, the Anderson-King bill. So New Mexico's got its imprint in this whole process too. But many states came into Medicaid and Medicare very reluctantly. They didn't want it in their states. They thought it was socialized medicine and things like that. And I'll never forget a wonderful doc out of Texas, Dr. Pendergrass, said, he told his colleagues, he says, you're going to get paid for what you're doing already. He says, this is only going to help stabilize the overall situation. So remember, Arizona was the last state to come kicking into the Medicaid program. They didn't even call it Medicaid. They called it the Health Cost Containment Program.
The access program.
Right, exactly. And so that's why many of the practitioners out there never were included in the reimbursement.
That's why he's moving for that.
And that's why he's moving, because he's saying there are alternative medicines and treatments which could save the state a lot of money if people can go to them.
Like, sure. And I think there's language in the original Affordable Care Act that allows this. It's just never really been followed up on. So it's an interesting idea. I mean, I'm just going to sign on to that bill. Again, Linda Trujillo's running that, but there's another example. These are bills that we're going to probably introduce in the Senate, and the House is going to have a whole bunch as well.
Yeah. So, well, it's going to be an exciting session.
And lots of healthcare.
Let me just say, if you pass a few of these, we're going to see some progress, I think, right off the bat in terms of keeping providers in the state.
Talk to us. Why don't you do your thing, because it's already half hour.
Oh,
I want to come back and ask the senator so you can think about it, because this is a tricky question. The healthcare services for immigrants and what you were talking about, immigration detention or whatever.
Okay. Well, let's remind our listeners, this is Health Para Todos on KSWV, Kiswave Radio, 810 on your AM dial, 99.9 on your FM dial. And we can also be accessed through the internet at kswvradio.com. And we are sponsored by Christus St. Vincent Regional Medical Center, Presbyterian Medical Services, and the Conalma Foundation. And as our guest today, we have the Honorable Senator Peter Wirth, who is the Senate Majority Leader of the New Mexico State Legislature, and we're previewing what looks like are going to be some very exciting issues and that arise during the course of the 30-day session.
While all the legislators are running around with their heads cut off, we're talking about El Mero Gallo here. El Mero Gallo. Talk to us about the immigration stuff, Peter.
Yeah, so again, the House for the last number of years has passed a bill that would basically ban a local governments from contracting with ICE to hold ICE holds as they go through the ICE process of federal government. It's a bill that has, I think we talked about Senator Ortiz Pino, I think he carried it 1 year and it came down to the floor and actually failed on the Senate floor. So it's made it through, always through the House and then through the Senate committees, died on the floor. Last year, it didn't get through the committee process, but Senator Joe Cervantes, chair of Senate Judiciary from Las Cruces, had hearings this summer on this issue, and I think kind of really dug into it and has changed his position, and I think now is going to be a sponsor on this bill. And so kind of the big breakthrough is that, you know, we have the votes now in the caucus in the Senate. Just got to get the bill to the floor, and then I think we can send it up to the governor. Interesting, the timing of this, obviously, given what's going on, especially in Minnesota, which is just horrific.
And in Oregon.
And in Oregon, and quite frankly, across the country.
Right.
And I just... But I think this is something that's one of those New Mexico things and New Mexico values. And so that bill will be, that bill is going to be prioritized as one of those four bills. It'll start in the House. And so, you know, we'll work on the Senate bills the first week. They'll work on the House bills, cross them over the weekend, send them up the next week. That'll be a lively debate.
Landmark, yeah.
Yeah, so it'll be a lively debate because I think our Republican colleagues are going to have lots of arguments as to why this is not the right direction. We'll certainly listen to
What do they propose? I mean, that's, to me, you look at what's going on in Minnesota and Oregon, and people are protesting. And you're trying to do something so that would not happen here in New Mexico. And what's the alternative? I mean, to go ahead and let ICE come in here and do whatever it wants, and then what?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the big national debate that we're having.
Right.
Because, again, this administration has prioritized this, and it's not like anything I remember seeing. Yeah. I mean, these masked, you know, with guns and tear gas, and it's just this.
It's despicable.
It's really unfortunate.
You know,
sure.
the it's interesting because I have friends across the country who seem to have bought into the idea that we need to secure our borders and all that. The fact of the matter is, you know, New Mexico's a unique state in that we are so dependent upon many of the immigrants that are living here for our economy, you know, and I had one friend said, well, you're living right there on the border. Why aren't you in support of what the administration is doing? I said, well, if you take all the immigrants out of New Mexico, I think our economy is going to collapse completely.
Well, and remember, in the last administration, we spent years dealing with the immigrant driver's licenses.
Exactly.
And, right. And the breakthrough happened with a compromise negotiated by two senators that you wouldn't quite think would be the ones that would do it, Senator Ingle, the Republican minority leader, and Senator John Arthur Smith.
Right.
And so they're the
very
ones.
Very conservative Democrat.
That's exactly right. Chair of the Senate Finance Committee. And they're the ones that said, enough is enough. We need to get this done. And so you're right, Larry. I mean, this is again.
So you also have money going for healthcare services for immigrants who are lawfully residing here. That's pretty important. And I think you also have one, you expanded or increased Medicaid because of the cuts and also the insurance to help with those, what do they call them?
The health insurance exchange
exchanges,
purchases that are done, the premiums
yeah.
They are subsidized by the federal government, and that's now been sort of taken away.
Right. Yeah, and let's talk about that because I'm really glad you brought that up because January 15th, which is 2 days. That's what? That's Thursday.
Yes.
That's the deadline to sign up for the New Mexico exchange.
Right.
And so folks should, if you're having insurance issues, you need to go check out kind of what options are there with that. Because you're right, we came in the special session and basically we held harmless those cuts that were coming from Washington because the subsidies were not extended. The House has now passed a bill to extend them.
But the Senate is expected to kill it.
To kill it. So we actually came in and we extended those. And we also did, in this budget, you're going to see, you know, certainly funding to make sure that this next year is fully funded. Because remember, the second 6 months will be the first half of the new budget.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so I just really encourage anyone who is kind of struggling through Medicaid or uninsured, go down and find out what the options are, because the state has stepped up. We had someone at a town hall last week stand up and thank us for what we did and said, you know, my insurance through the exchange is the best it's been.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so, again,
well, let's remind our listeners precisely how it works, just to let me put in a statement here. Remember that when the Affordable Care Act was passed, and it was also the Affordable Care Act and Patient Protection Act was what it was called. States were given the option of expanding Medicaid eligibility, which our governor at the time, Governor Susana Martinez, and you, Senator, have praised her for that. And I have praised her also for taking a bold political step, because she was being pressured by her Republican colleagues not to expand Medicaid. But she did. We had about a 200,000 increase in Medicaid eligibles in New Mexico as a result. But for the people who weren't eligible, they could then purchase insurance through the health insurance exchanges, which in which many of the state's insurers marketed their products for basic health insurance. And depending on what their incomes were, the poorer they were, the more help they would get in paying for the premiums through the subsidies. Exactly. And that's what's gone away in the federal budget that was signed into law in July of 2025. And so people who would have cost them $400 to a month to insure their family, they were able to purchase it for like $80 to $100, and the federal government subsidy kicked in and paid the rest to the insurance companies. Yep. Now, that's what's going away. So all of a sudden now, families that were paying $80 to $100 because of their economic circumstances, they're looking at a $400 bill now a month.
Unless they're in New Mexico.
They're in New Mexico because the state legislature here took the step of saying, well, if the federal government's not going to pay for it, we will.
Well, and the irony is, and it's great. I mean, this is why it's also good for me to be on this show, because I'm always learning too from you guys. But the irony and the thing is, all those red Southern states that didn't do the Medicaid expansion, well, all their citizens have gone and used the exchange.
That's right.
And so that's the reason that this is.
See, they're even more dependent.
That's
on
right.
It
it's not a red or blue issue when you get right down to it. I think it's really worked. Mm-hmm. And it's just tragic that it's happening at the national level, but at least we've taken a step
due diligence.
Yeah, well, that's one thing we can be very grateful for in 2026 is that we've got a legislature. And I know the legislature takes a lot of heat, a lot of criticism, but boy, this legislature has done wonders in terms of putting the state in a good position to weather what is a very uncertain healthcare environment.
Yeah, that's really true. And that ties back to our discussion about the bond ratings. These permanent funds we've created, I mean, these, even the early childhood fund, which has over $10 billion into it. I can remember in 2020 when Senator Smith, it was $300 million. And when we set it up, I remember again, that twinkle in his eye sitting in my office saying, well, you know, it's also a backup reserve.
Yes.
So, you know, again, this wild roller coaster of up and down, we've really leveled that out. Mm-hmm. So we are in a good position, but there's also a whole bunch of uncertainty.
Yes, so. Exactly.
I like that you allocated, or you plan to allocate, dollars for certified community behavioral health centers. Mm-hmm. You know, that's really a first.
A big deal,
because it's part of your Behavioral Health Reconstruction Act. And this creates centers where people can get services.
And last night at the Chamber Town Hall here in Santa Fe, it was amazing. The discussion wasn't about malpractice like a lot of the others. It was all about behavioral health.
Exactly.
We had all kinds of providers and they're all attending the meetings and the courts, you know, we're rolling this out by district and it just, it's really exciting to kind of see that level of collaboration to rebuild something that's a critical part of this whole healthcare discussion.
Well, we had talked when you did the wonderful things you did as far as rebuilding the behavioral health infrastructure for the state. One of the issues that was out there that was being talked about by a lot of people who were in full support of it was, where are we going to find the providers? Where are we going to, where we can do this, but we don't have the people to be able to staff it and so forth. So now this is just one more piece that's being added to it, which is going to answer that question and hopefully provide us with a sufficient number of providers to meet the behavioral health needs of the state. And as Arturo and I have both said on this program, as the years go by, we recognize how much more important behavioral health is in with respect to what our overall health status in the state is.
Sure.
You know, it used to all be medical surgical, but now we're recognizing the vast majority of our problems are behavioral health related, and it spills over into issues such as juvenile committing serious crimes and what we're going to do there. And it spills over into what's happening to our elderly population, which doesn't have access to the resources needed. Just the issue of getting older is one which creates all kinds of behavioral health issues. So
it sure does.
We can all relate to that, right?
Unfortunately, Arturo and I probably are there a little sooner.
I can witness to that. Senator, you know, the other big issue, and certainly was part of the issue in Albuquerque, and it's an issue that our new mayor also ran on, and that's basically attainable affordable housing.
Yes.
You've put some money. Tell us a little bit about that. What's the strategy there?
So there's a whole bunch of different, again, and we had a similar thing at a Indivisible meeting last Monday night. And we were talking so much about healthcare. Someone, why aren't you guys talking about housing? It's because we're focused on healthcare. But here's the list of things that are going to happen. A bill that I'm working on and that I've been working on, it's funny, it's a bill that actually I sponsored last session that died on the Senate floor. That's always fun. But I don't have a problem. You know, sometimes you got to push the limits a little bit.
Right.
But using property tax abatement to help construction of new housing.
What does that mean? Talk for our audience.
So basically, you give a developer an abatement, a delay, or not paying property tax for some period to be able to reconstruct. There's a whole bunch of housing product that's dilapidated, deteriorating because of our really strange property tax laws and the tax lightening issue.
Yes.
Multifamily in particular, multifamily can get the 3% versus the current and correct valuation. Ben Lujan put this 3% cap in there. And so there's this weird disincentive to fix all this multifamily housing. So we tried to fix that through a bill. The assessors kind of went crazy and fair enough.
Because they were going to have to figure it out.
It was going to cost money. And and it ended up that I actually got a lot of my far left Democrats that didn't like it at first on board. And then we ended up, all the Republicans jumped off except one, Nicole Tobiasen from Albuquerque. He was like, what are you guys doing? This is crazy. And so it didn't pass, but I think probably a good thing. It's too early. We've come back and there's something that we're talking about in Santa Fe, the MRA, Metropolitan Redevelopment Act, that allows a district to be created. They're talking about that, kind of the Midtown MRA.
Right.
You've heard a lot about the council. Well, we're going to put in a provision that would allow a local government to add housing as part of that district. And that's a way to constitutionally be able to potentially abate some property tax and do some different incentives that exist under that statute. So that's one I'm working on as an example. Lots of things I know are in the budget. I don't have that right in front of me, but no question, housing.
It's a big issue.
It's a big issue. One bill we didn't talk about that we're going to push on the front end in the Senate is the civil commitment.
Yes.
Harm to self, harm to others. The governor wants that. House is not yet there on that. that one. So you'll see it move quickly through the Senate. And I think then the House will work on that. But that's, again,
talk about civil commitment. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So this whole AOT, assisted outpatient treatment, right. Process, it's basically giving the court the tools to get kind of those individuals that are in this vicious cycle into the treatment that they need. And so it's tweaking some of the language there to give some more options in the AOT process, assisted outpatient treatment. That's being rolled out now in the first judicial district by Judge Beachide. Mm-hmm. It's been down in the third in Las Cruces. That's where Mary Center Papin,
yes,
who got that bill passed, I think in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing is all the participants in that have said we need some more tools. And so that's going to be one.
Unfortunately, what a judge is often faced with is I either incarcerate this person or I turn them loose because yep. they're not competent
yep.
or I deem them incompetent to stand trial.
Yep.
And so now if we've got some alternatives where a judge could order treatment for an individual, that's a much better option to serve and not give up completely on particularly a young offender.
That's right.
So let me just say, this is a very progressive package and very ambitious.
Well, but I'm proud to be a New Mexican here.
That's right. So am I.
Well, let me just one thing, and I've said this before. I really encourage folks to come over, participate.
Yes.
You can come right down on the Senate floor and visit with me before we gavel in. And I always like to say the lobbyists are all there, and I'd much rather talk to all the people listening today. Testify on hearings.
Yes.
The town halls we did were super helpful. You know, just being able to hear
what people have.
That's right. What's concerns. Out there. And the number of times when you're in the craziness of the debate and something, and you're trying to, and you remember back and say, oh, wait, you know what?
This came up
and this was an issue. So I heard what was said by my constituents. So
that's so important, because you don't see that happening in the national level.
In that same vein, you know, I do have to, do a shout out for the Disabilities Advocacy Council, because they do a wonderful job and they've done a wonderful job of advocating on behalf of persons with disabilities over the years. And I'm talking about Ellen Pines and Jim Jackson. We go back so long. We've worked together for decades, but they do such a very good job of getting the word out and getting information to people and communicating with legislators, you know, mm-hmm. on the issues that are of concern to theirs, to their constituencies and so forth.
We appreciate you, Jim and Alan. This is really helpful.
Yes. In fact, when we were arranging this interview, Chris and I were talking about it, and he says, well, where are you getting all this information from? I said, well, you know who does a very good job is the Disability Council, and they do. So let's give them due credit for the wonderful work that they do also.
Yep. Senator, I know there's a whole host of other things that you're going to be involved in. I think from what I can tell is that with the homework that you have done, that you feel positive about what's coming down the pike for this session?
I do. And let me just say, I've served now 22 years, and I've served with two governors in the eighth year of their terms, and it didn't go too well with the last two.
Because you're a lame duck at that point.
Well, it's there's no question. So I just feel like it's really important in this moment for our legislature to kind of work collaboratively, to go over and debate like, you know, cats mm-hmm. and dogs.
Put the gloves on, yeah.
But to do so in a way that results in a product, and that's something that will kind of be part of Governor Lujan Grisham's legacy.
Yeah, sure.
And so I just think, and it's working with her, you know, you're not going to get everything. She knows that.
Yeah.
And just understanding that the extraordinary things that we've been able to do the last 7 years, including COVID in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
I just think when we go back and look at all that,
This is going to be a very, we're going to look back fondly on this time because we did so many constructive things.
That's right.
And one thing we have to do is commend the governor for, she's still on the job, very much so.
Absolutely.
And she's going to be on the job right up until that last minute when she relinquishes power to whoever's elected governor.
Well, and just understand, she could always bring us back in sessions. We're aware of that too. So
I didn't want to put any negativity on.
No. I don't think that's negative that she's had the courage to call special sessions.
Well, some people have. Yes. You and I haven't.
Well, and the thing about it is, though, I think though that we have, there's a mutual understanding of how important it is that. Certainly, that's her right to do it, but let's do it collaboratively. Let's get it lined up.
Make it work. Yeah.
And look at what can happen when we do it right.
Well, so. And I think the governor has benefited from your advice, Senator, because I remember we had this conversation before in a previous one that you really have to sort of take care of what the issues are before you call the special session. Otherwise, you're going to waste everybody's time when you get the special session going and you can't come to resolution or agreement on a lot of these things.
And you're running around like chickens with your head.
We keep going back to that.
Yeah. Well, Peter, you've certainly been insightful, given us a pretty decent overview of what's going on. And as you know, we'll be there or let us know if you want to talk about something that's critical, because it could go one way or the other and you want people to get to the legislature. Let us know. We'll be there, you know. Yeah. Let's sum this up. But before we do that, I wanted to recognize someone that we lost this year too, Roberto Mondragon.
Oh yes, our former lieutenant governor.
You know, we mentioned the people we lost. The former lieutenant governor, he was something else.
Yes,
musician, legislator, advocate, the whole thing.
Media specialist too. He was on the radio.
What I liked about him was that he'd get on the radio, and it was his job to announce all the obituaries.
Right.
And he would talk about familia, that this person, comadre so-and-so, compadre so-and-so.
He knew everybody.
And the rosary will be at 10 o'clock at the cathedral or something like that. You know, he was something else with that. Yeah. So may he rest in peace.
Yes.
Sum it up for us, Senator.
So again, it's super important session in the sense that this is setting the budget for the last 6 months of this administration, the first 6 months of the next administration. Healthcare is going to be front and center. No question. We've heard loud and clear. We've been working on it, but you're going to see a whole bunch of things built into the budget on that. And again, a little bit different up front, doing this kind of bills in the first half of the session. The newer members, it's interesting. I mean, you get the criticism from some members, and other members love. The newer members are like, this is great. And we want to get to work.
Right.
And then there's pushback. But I think we proved that we could do it the last 60-day session.
And the work that you've done, it just occurred to me, you've set an agenda where those who are looking to become governor, we can go back to them and say, well, what about this? The legislature did this. Where do you stand on this? Where do you stand? These are all positive things, and get a sense if they're going to support the legislature once they get into office.
And the other thing too is doing these bills up front means we're not doing them in the back end where they're going to clog everything up even more. It's going to be clogged no matter what, given how many different things will be in play. So,
well, and Senator, there are restrictions on what the governor can do in her last 6 months too. Also, there's state law that requires that she not touch a certain portion of the budget, because I think many governors might be tempted to just spend the whole package before they leave and leave the new incoming governor with nothing.
I'll make sure to let her know you brought that up, Larry.
and that health part of those is looking at that, you know?
Well, remember, the governor and I have a special relationship. I used to I used to supervise her when she was at the Department of Health, and we at least do understand each other very well.
Well, that's been, ladies and gentlemen, our metal man, Senator Peter Worth, giving us some insights into what's coming up in the next legislative session. Larry, valuable insights, valuable bills that are going to be debated, some very innovative that could be controversial, particularly on immigration and ICE and those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But they're putting it, let's talk about it, which is more than what some states are doing, you know? And so This has been Health Para Todos with your hosts, Arturo Gonzalez.
And Larry Martinez.
And our fifth amigo, Senator Peter Wirth. And he's always welcome on our program. And Health Para Todos brought to you by whom, Larry?
Christus St. Vincent Regional Medical Center, Presbyterian Medical Services, and the Conalma Foundation.
And we'll be back for another session, probably during the legislative session.
Right. We'll be up there making periodic broadcasts. We've got Disabilities Day. We've got Primary Care Day. We've got Behavioral Health Day.
You've got Aging and Long-Term Services Day.
Right. So we want to be interviewing people to see what their priorities are also.
We need to talk about an Arturo and Larry Day.
Well, we're pushing that. And I was going to ask you to try to talk to the governor about putting that on her call. But she said, I know Larry. I don't know Arturo, but I know Larry. So let's not do that this year. Thank you, Peter. Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your time. You're so generous with
Chris,
your time.
Thank you for being the man behind the scenes, getting the senator here and stuff like that.
Okay.
So, ladies and gentlemen, Health Para Todos. Have a happy new year. We'll see you. Let's have a good legislative session. God bless you all.